Our scripture reading this morning comes from Matthew 5, verses 13 through 16. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? It is no longer good for anything, except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden, neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. This is the word of the Lord. For the last couple of weeks, we've been studying these metaphors for the church, trying to learn more about the church as Jenny and I learn more about Fairview. And 2 weeks ago, we talked about the household of God, the family, the oikos, which talked about belonging and how we relate to one another. Last week, we talked about living stones and the priestly kingdom, about our purpose, God's purpose for us. And this week, we're studying how the church can be like salt and light, which gets at how we can engage with the world. This is a really old problem for Christians. How do we engage with the surrounding culture? Knowing what we know about God, how does it affect the way we engage in our community, in political discourse, and the needs of our communities? Paul charged the church to live in the world, but not of the world, because there's this profound tension in how we are supposed to live. When I was in college, I worked with this organization called Young Life, which tried to bring the gospel to disinterested high school students. And one of the things that's really stuck with me were the questions that the high schoolers would bring up when they were considering whether or not to become a Christian. They had great questions. They were always, well, if I become a Christian, does that mean that I won't be able to drink or to smoke? Does that mean I won't be able to dance or listen to music with profanity? Does it mean I can't watch this movie? Does it mean I can't read Harry Potter? What does it mean to be a Christian? What does it keep me from doing? You know, I think these questions are examples of our need to figure out how to live in the world. I think we still have them, probably grown-up examples of them. What does it mean to live out my faith at work or at school? What does it mean, and how can we balance sports and other commitments on Sundays? Do I need to pray when I go out to dinner at a restaurant? What about if I go through the drive-thru? What about if I pack my lunch and bring it to work? What about do you pray before the appetizer or before the entree? Apparently a lot of my questions are about how to pray in restaurants. But this is what this example gets at, salt and light. Not specifically when to pray, but more broadly on how we as the church should engage with the world. R.T. France wrote a great commentary on the Gospel of Matthew. He said that salt and light affect their environment by being distinctive. The disciple who is visibly different from other men will have a great effect on them. So there's two aspects of salt and light. First, salt and light are distinctive. They are visibly different. They bring contrast. And second, salt and light exert effect on other things. They're supposed to bring changes to their environment. So this week, as we unpack the concept of salt and light, we seek to see what it is to live in this metaphor. We're going to look first at this calling to contrast, this calling to be different, and second, the calling to change, to affect our environment. All right? So first, the calling to contrast, to be different. Verses 14 through 16 say, "You are the light of the world. A town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. Instead, they put it on its stand, and it gives light to everyone in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven." See, light here and often in the Bible is used to be as the opposite of darkness. In the Gospel of John, Jesus explains that he is the light of the world. The Bible also uses it this way in Job as kind of a paradox, an opposition of darkness to show the contrast. Light makes things visible. You can see things with it. It illuminates the difference. It illuminates situations. And according to Jesus, this light should not be hidden under a bushel, but should be obvious as a city upon a hill. The city on a hill, which is a phrase a lot of us are probably familiar, is a famous sermon by John Winthrop, and I think probably like five of the last seven presidents have quoted it, have used it as a speech, because it shows this contrast, a sharp divide between the model city, and the rest of the world. Both salt and light are images of this contrast. So, salt keeps meat from going bad, light keeps things from being dark. Jesus is saying that we, the church, are the contrast for the surrounding culture. So how do we, as Christians, provide this difference? How do we provide contrast? Last week was Halloween. I'm not sure how many of you were here last Sunday, but we had trunk or treat after the service, and it was really fun to walk out and see all the kids dressed up in costumes and getting candy, and it just made me think that, you know, a lot of churches have trouble figuring out what to do with Halloween. There are some churches that are like, well, you know, we want to fully embrace Halloween. Others ignore it. Others like, well, we need to do our own thing. Jenny and I are both from Lynchburg, Virginia, which is mostly famous for being the home of Liberty University and a large Baptist church started by Jerry Falwell called Thomas Road Baptist. And they came up with their own way to do Halloween. So when we were kids, they have this thing called Scaremare, and it's a Christian haunted house. This was the Liberty way to celebrate Halloween. And basically, it was packed. And what you would do is you would go with your friends. You'd wait in line for a couple of hours. You'd eat some kettle corn. Then you'd walk into the house, and you'd get really scared. They had the examples of, they had parts of normal haunted house. So there was like a guy in a hockey mask and a chainsaw who was trying to scare you. But then when you got inside the house, they had like scary stuff from the Bible, like different biblical imagery to try and scare you. And then at the end, they would put you into a tent, and they would have someone come and said, you know, that was really scary. That's very similar to hell. And if you would like to avoid that in the future, then you should commit your life to Christ. So that was their different way to do Halloween. You know, they had to find a different way. You know, as Christians, we know that we're supposed to live differently from the world. You know, Paul tells us to be in the world, but not of the world. But what does that really look like? Are we being different for difference's sake? Are we being different for difference's sake? Is it just being weird or strange so that people see, like, oh, that group of strange people, they must be Christians, like Scaremare? No, but it's supposed to be a purposeful difference that we're called to. It's showing the contrast that salt and light demonstrate. See, there are purposeful differences, like how we as Christians should use money, how we should approach sex and marriage, how we define success in the world, how we treat the poor, how we engage with strangers, how we handle conflict. We are different than the world because ultimately our identity, our calling, our citizenship is found in Christ. God, not our employer or even our nation, is who we owe our ultimate allegiance to. It reminds me of the book of Daniel, where we can read these really powerful stories of Daniel and his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were serving King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon during the Babylonian captivity, and they worked really hard. They did everything they could to help the king, but they were constantly in danger because of their ultimate allegiance to God over the nation. They were helpful, but people tried to create more problems by saying that they weren't loyal to the country. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were thrown into a furnace because they refused to bow to the king, and Daniel was thrown into a lion's den when he refused to worship the king because he was worshiping God. See, this is the challenge of being different. Do we stand out with purposeful difference, like Daniel and his friends, or do we blend into the surroundings? Does our faith make us into a different kind of person, a different kind of parent, a different kind of husband, a different kind of wife? Does our faith affect how we talk to people? How about people we disagree with, people we don't like? See, this is really hard. We are charged with living a life so different and remarkable that it illuminates the contrast between the beauty of Christ and the darkness of the world. That's it. So part of the contrast is that we are then illustrating the contrast between the beauty of Christ and the darkness of the world. I think that's a very difficult challenge. It's hard to do. In fact, the only way I know for us to act as a contrast to darkness, to practice this purposeful difference whenever we can, is to lean on God as he always does so. When the Gospel of John said that Jesus is the light of the world, and that light can shine through us. He is our only hope to be contrast and to be this change that they are calling us to. So what does it mean to be called to change? You know, I really like the phrase, the salt of the earth. That's a phrase we still use today. I'm sure some of you have heard that in more everyday speak. I think that when I normally hear it, it means people who are good or decent, to have some sort of value. Jesus here is talking about salt and its effect, right? What happens if salt loses its saltiness? It's useless. See, salt of the earth means that the church has value and is useful because of its saltiness. The value is its usefulness. In biblical times, salt was used mainly to preserve meat. Before refrigeration, you could keep meat by dry curing it, which meant rubbing it down with salt. I really liked John Stott was talking about this verse, and he said, "The world is like rotting meat, but the church is the salt to preserve it." See, but here's the thing. Salt needs to be pretty close to the rotting meat to do its job. If the salt is in a different house or a different room, if it's feet away, if it's inches away, it doesn't do any good to the rotting meat. It needs proximity. It needs to be close. The salt needs to be rubbed on to the meat. And that's what we need to be. We need to be close to the world. We need to be rubbed into society. And that's also tough for us, especially if you're here, if you're really involved at church, if you're... kids go to a Christian school, it's just so easy to start spending most of your time with other Christians. Spend time with people who are a lot like you. We tend to self-segregate into our own demographics. But as salt and light, we need to know that if God is going to help us, is going to use us to help transform the world, then we're going to have to get out of our bubble and get closer to that world. This is a part of the calling for this metaphor, that we are built to care about the welfare of the world. This week is election day. Carol and I were talking about elections earlier today. And this brings up a real challenge for churches. You know, how should we engage in politics as Christians, or should we engage with politics as Christians? I believe that being a Christian is very political, but not very partisan. By political, I mean that as a Christian, we have these shared values and the desire to reach a common goal, versus partisan, meaning specific political parties caring about winning, caring about division. The gospel is inherently political because it says things like you must care for the welfare of the world, that you are created, everyone is created in the image of God, that it tells us to care about the least of these, to love our neighbor, to extend grace and mercy, to care about justice and peace. But I don't think that the gospel is inherently partisan. One of my mentors used to say every election Sunday that if you are a Christian Republican and your faith doesn't make you love Democrats more, if you're a Christian Democrat and your faith doesn't make you love Republicans more, then you're doing something wrong. Knowing that our citizenship in heaven can allow us to be salt and light this week, you know, maybe part of our difference can be that once we voted, that we can help calm the political divide, that we can be purposely different, that we cannot get drawn into the hatred and enmity on either side. You know, in today's metaphor, Jesus charges us to care about the well-being of his people and to engage in the process. Paul uses this language of citizenship, that we are to participate in the state system and culture surrounding, even though we are resident aliens. Ultimately, our citizenship is in heaven. We are resident aliens in Pennsylvania and in America because our ultimate citizenship is in heaven. It reminds me of the book of Jeremiah, back in the Babylonian captivity, the same captivity that we can read about Daniel and his friends. Jeremiah is writing to a people who were forcibly taken and made to live in Babylon. In chapter 29, the prophet tells them to seek the shalom of the city. In various translations, shalom is rendered as welfare, as peace and prosperity. He's saying to seek the welfare, peace, and prosperity of the city that you are living in. Even as captives, as aliens, we are called to seek the peace and prosperity of the city we live in. We are called to care about the shalom of our environments. As salt and light, we care about the poor, we care about life, we care about justice, the environment, education, and all these things which relate to the peace and prosperity of the city. Last week, we talked about our priestly duties and how God does not intend for us to feel disconnected from the problems of the world. That when someone who lives somewhere else, who speaks a different language, who has a different nationality or skin tone or gender or level of education, when someone else is suffering, that means our brother or our sister is suffering. And it's our familial duty as the oikos of God and our priestly duty to help. Is that what we are known for? I remember listening to an interview a few years ago with Colin Powell, former Secretary of State and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and he was speaking at this conference about Christian leadership. And I remember him telling a story, and he said, you know, in the movies, whenever you're in a military situation, there's always a really intense moment where the general or admiral is giving an order, and then he has to say, that's an order, to actually get the people to do it. Colin Powell said, I've never in my life had to say, that's an order. It was obvious that it was an order beforehand. He said, if you're a leader, if you have to explain that you're the leader, then you're probably not acting as a leader. Sometimes I wonder about this for Christianity. Do we always have to explain that we're Christians, or is that self-evident beforehand? The author of the hymn, whose name I'm forgetting, but the hymn, They'll Know We Are Christians by Our Love, the author, you know, he based that on a text in John 13, but also the history of the church, and that in the early church, people recognized Christians by the fact that they were the ones who loved one another and loved the world. I said, I don't know who those people are, but they're the people who love. I wonder if people are recognizing us because of the effect we have on others, because they can tell that we are Christians by our love, or can they tell we're Christians when they look at our Facebook wall or our bumper stickers? To live out this calling to change the world, we must not cut ourselves off from the world and live in isolation, but we must be present in the surrounding world and seek the welfare, the peace, and the prosperity of the city we are called. We are called to be salt and light, to be different, to effect change. We are called to be men and women who don't cut themselves off, but are present in the culture and working for the shalom of the community. We are called to be a church not enveloped by man-made institutions, not defined by our personal beliefs, our tribalism, our political ideologies, but defined by a distinct and purposeful difference. My friend, Corey Widmer, who is my boss in Richmond, he's a pastor, he made a great point about this text that I find really challenging myself. He said, if the house is dark, do you blame the house or do you ask where the lights are? If the meat is bad, you don't get upset at the meat. That's what meat does. You ask, where's the salt? It's easy for us to get upset at the problems of the world, the deterioration of society, the impact of cultural change, but that's what we should expect to happen. That's what happens to human institutions. That's what happens to the world. The real question is, where are we, the church, in the midst of that? Where is the church in the midst of broken families, of bitter political arguments, places of war and strife, manifestations of hatred and prejudice? We need to train ourselves not to point fingers, to place blame, But to look at ourselves and ask, why aren't we having a positive impact in those places? Why aren't we, the church, being salt and light? God has a plan to renew all things. And the good news is that he's already demonstrated that plan on us. Jesus Christ has saved you and allowed you to become a new creation, one that God can dwell in, that you can be an instrument of renewal for others. This week, I'd like us all to spend some time in thinking about salt and light, to think about this purposeful difference. I'd love for you to come up with a way where you can act as salt and light in your day-to-day life, some way you can demonstrate this in the week to come. When you come up with an idea or come up with a plan, I'd really encourage everyone to talk to someone else about it, maybe your spouse or your parent or a friend here at Fairview, because like we talked about last week with y'all, it's not an individual charge. This is a corporate responsibility for us all to live salt and light. And if we share an idea about how we can do it, then they can encourage us and help us to do that. We were created to be a different type of people. Not a weird kind of different, but a purposeful kind of different. A kind of different to affect change in the world around us and to participate in God's plan to renew all things.